This last segment of the halachas of katan and shaita, it deserves a official disclaimer before. Really, all these shiurim, these halacha shiurim, are not meant to be halacha lamaisa. Every case in cheshmish, but is unique, and things need to be double checked with a professional in each case, someone who's a mumcha in these inyanim. But specifically, when it comes to the topic of shaita and apotropis, so the Peskim use a lashon that these are things that are eifshel l'tzayir b'chasav. They're things that are very hard to actually give exact, precise definitions, and they literally are case by case. They have to be assessed by someone who is familiar with these topics, who can give the proper guidance whether this is a case of a shaita, it's not a case of a shaita, whether an apotropis is warranted, not warranted, what exactly are the powers of the apotropis, whether the apotropis himself should be deposed. All these are all very complex situations that are totally kafiha inyan, kafiha raisei ne'adayin. So all this is just a topical overview. It's not meant to be taken halacha l'maaseh in any way. So we've discovered that in order to have kinyanim, you have to have a certain level of das. And when it came to katan, Chazal instituted a kind of pu'utais, that even if they didn't reach the full level of das, but to some extent they can engage in commerce, k'dei chayav. So what about when it comes to adults that are lacking in deah? What's their status when it comes to mekach memker and other areas? So the most relevant, I guess, the more common one is an adult that's drunk. An adult that's drunk seems to be lacking in deah. So what's his status when it comes to mekach memker? If he's under the influence, can he be engaged in commerce? If he does decide to go through deals and stuff like that while he's inebriated, are those deals binding? So the truth is that halacha generally assumes that someone who's drunk is considered to be within his regular faculties and all of his actions are binding. Shikr's mekach memker is completely binding and everything he does is valid. With the one exception is if he reaches a level of shechusa shalait, if he's so completely drunk that he has no awareness of his actions altogether, like the classic case of light, so then he is already considered like a shaita. But that is a rather extreme situation. Most cases, someone who's drunk, if he does some sort of deal, that deal will be binding, and he will be bound to it, the other side will be bound to it. Interestingly, even if he is a shikr kalait, he's completely unaware of his actions, if he's mazik, the marshal says he's chayev, because he shouldn't have gotten so drunk. He's chayev for the getting drunk. So that for to being drunk is never a p'tor of hezek. If it's he got drunk for a mitzvah or a purim, that's a whole discussion in the Peskim. Often he will be pater in that case. But typically, if somebody gets drunk and he's mazik, he will be chayev. As far as a chayrish, right? So generally, chayrish, someone who is a deaf mute, is categorized throughout Shas, throughout Chazal. It's chayrish shaita v'katan. He's generally assumed to be in the category of a shaita, that he's lacking the deah. He's not intermingling with people in the regular way. And therefore, he's assumed not to have the level of das necessary to be chayav mitzvahs and to go through mekach memker. So now, how do we define a cheresh? Is different than an ilim. An ilim is someone who can hear, but is someone who can hear but cannot speak. He's nishtatik, like he can't speak, but he can hear. So a person who can hear, even though he cannot communicate through speech, he is considered a regular bardas. He is chayav kol mitzvot Torah, and he could do all sorts of mekach memker, so long as we can clarify what it is that he's trying to accomplish. So he can do it in writing, or it's some other method of communication that is clear, that we know what he means, so that person is a regular bardas. If the person can hear even a little bit, like you scream into his ears and he can hear you, so that already is not considered a chayta, he's not considered a chayrish, that's considered hearing, that's enough. And weiter, he is chayav kol mitzvot Torah, and he is all his mekach memker, everything is valid. If somebody cannot hear and cannot speak at all, so then he is halachic shaita, meaning he's a cheresh who has the status of a shaita. However, there is a difference. A cheresh is similar to a katan in the sense that he could do mekach memker by metopolin. It's midar abonon, it's not midar isa. But just like we said, a katan who reached the level of pu'utais can be involved in mekach memker. So to a cheresh, his remus v'nirmas, he can communicate his desires to buy or sell movable goods, and that will be valid. As far as real estate, though, they did not make this takana. So a cheresh, a halachic cheresh, cannot buy or sell real estate. He could buy it in some level of schia, but he definitely cannot sell real estate. If he could speak, but he cannot hear. So this is a more unique case. Usually, at least in the olden days, the assumption was almost always if you could not hear at all, then you would not be able to gain a faculty of speech. If somebody could speak but could not hear, then according to most Rishonim, he is considered a pekech. If he speaks regularly, he's considered a pekech. But with the notable exception being in commerce. When it comes to inyanim of commerce, someone who can speak but cannot hear at all is considered a cheresh as far as Mekhel Memker, and he's back to the status that he can sell movable goods, but he cannot sell real property. Now, there's a lot of discussion in the earlier Paiskim about a cheresh who was taught to communicate. He cannot hear, he cannot speak necessarily, but he communicates. So the Paiskim generally assume that he is at best a Safek Cheresh, but we're not about to take him out of the category of Cheresh. Even if it's clear that he's very astute and he knows exactly what's going on, still, as far as Halacha, he's considered generally at best a Safek Pekech. There's a tshuva that Tzemach Tzedek discusses a deaf mute that was in his area. He said he was a chayit, he was a tailor, and he said he often saw him in Beis Din. He would be brought to Beis Din, he would bring other people to Beis Din, and it was very clear that people were able to communicate with him, he was able to communicate with them, and he knew exactly what was going on. And yet, when it came to him getting married, the Tzemach Tzedek was not okay with him just getting married on his own as if he was a regular pekech. He went through the process of the marriage of a cheresh. So generally, he's considered a halachic cheresh, even though he can communicate, because he cannot hear and he cannot speak. If a more recent question is if through machinery he can hear, with a hearing aid or more specific with a cochlear implant, so he definitely cannot hear at all, except when he has a machine, then all of a sudden he can hear. So what's his status? So it's discussed in the later Paiskim. Rav Moshe has a chiddush in this regard, and he says that such a person who cannot hear without a machine, but he says he could be considered a medaber if he learns to speak, and now he can communicate pretty normatively with people, so he's considered a medaber, but he's not considered a shemeah. He still is considered someone who cannot hear. So machines don't make it that he could hear, meaning the Torah doesn't recognize that as being regular hearing, and therefore he's considered that special case of somebody who can speak but cannot hear, which we said is that as far as most of the Torah is considered a pekech, so he's b'chayvin all the mitzvahs and everything else. So the problem is going to be dafka legabe commerce, when it comes to buying and selling, there he still will have the status of a cheresh, and therefore Moshe says you will not be able to buy or sell karka. So having said that, the halacha is that a cheresh, we make an apotropos for him. Unlike a katan, unlike a gadol who is over bar bas mitzvah but did not yet reach the age of 20, or the debut matzmatin who cannot sell property, and we also do not appoint an apotropos for someone who is over bar bas mitzvah, a cheresh is not like that. A cheresh, he's like the katan after pu'utas in the sense that we will appoint an apotropos for him. So here you can have a case where someone is a halachically a cheresh, so he'll be appointed an apotropos to sign off on the real estate deals he does, but really he might be much smarter than apotropos. So it's a unique kind of case, but I think that's how it should come out, that on the one hand he cannot halachically make a valid kinyan for real estate, but on the other hand, if he does it with an apotropos who signs off on it, then it'll be valid. So that's for cheresh. What about a shaita? So now a shaita is very clear, he is completely excluded from mekhel memker altogether. He doesn't have the karmas pu'utas. Someone who is halachically a shaita cannot be involved in commerce altogether. And he'll get an apotropos, and his executor will have to do things on his behalf. But how do we define a shaita in this regard? So this was a major, major issue with the famous Cleaver Get. It was someone who gave a divorce, and at the time of the get, he seemed completely sane. But there were circumstances surrounding the get that indicated that there were certain things that were atypical. So this it was a firestorm of tshuvas were written at the time. But how exactly do we define a shaita for Gittin and other areas of the Torah? So a lot of the sugya revolves around this, a Mor Chagiga, It says, Tanarban Ezer Shaita. The Bryce says, who is of course defined as a Shaita? And Rashi says, what does it mean, Ezer Shaita? Ha'omer B'chol Makayim, which is referred to in each place, in every place, Shepotim Minam Mitzvahs, he's exempt from Mitzvahs, Umin Ha'inish, and he doesn't get punished, Ein Kinyan Kinyan, and he cannot buy anything, Vein Mekor Memkor, and he cannot sell anything. So Rashi is saying, this Bryce is going to define for us the Shaita of the whole Kol Torah Kula, including Mekor Memkor, and the Bryce gives three criteria. Yotzei Yechidi B'Laila, this person goes out alone at night, meaning in inexplicably in unsafe situations. Ba'alon Beis HaKvaris, he sleeps over in the cemetery. And Karias Ksusa, he tears his clothing. Now there's a machlekes, does he have to do all three of these things, or is even one of them enough? And the Halacha Zakir Bechanan, who says that even one of them is enough, Taisus explains it's not enough that he did it one time doesn't make anyone into a shaita, but he consistently does something that is an oddity, like one of these three things, and there's no clear explanation for why he's doing what he's doing. And the Gemara adds one more, that he just destroys what's given to him. He's given things and he just ma'abed it, he just throws it away for no explicable reason, which is related to the idea of tearing his clothing, that he doesn't take care of his things for no reason. So this is considered the halachic shaita. So there were rishayim who took this very literally, and they said to be a shaita, you have to have these criteria. It has to be one of these things in order to be defined as a shaita. If he does not have one of these three things, then even though he does all sorts of interesting things, he could be eccentric, but he's not a shaita. This is the opinion of Rabbeinu Simcha, who said, you know, one of the rishayim, and he's off quoted as saying that it has to be one of these simonim, otherwise this person is considered a pekech, and he can give a get, he's a regular person. The problem is the Rambam. The Rambam, in Hilchos Eidos, he seems to take a totally different approach. He says, Shaita is possible Eidos, because he's not a ben mitzvahs. Then he says, Lo yishaita shum halach arum, mishaber kelim, v'zerik havon, b'vad, not only is an insane person someone who goes around unclothed, he breaks vessels, he breaks kelim, he throws rocks. Not only that, anyone who his mind seems to be addled, and there's something wrong with the way he thinks at v'davrim adavarim, it's something with one of the things. Even though he speaks and he asks in other areas totally regularly, still is it possible? He is included in the category of a shaita. Ram goes on and says, if he has bouts of insanity, so then while he's insane, so then he's considered a shaita. While he's regular, then he is considered regular. But you have to check it very carefully to make sure that he's not in the beginning or the end of one of these bouts of insanity. Then he says, "Apsom biyayis." Someone was completely foolish. Sheim akirin dvarim shemutarin shesayson zezay. He doesn't recognize when his own words contradict each other. V'loyavinu in yoni adarok gedarach shevin shayom arutz. They don't understand things where other people understand things. Chinam v'uholim v'nechbazim v'daitom v'mshtagim biyayis. People who just were overly agitated and they're rash, and in their minds you just can't pin them down. They're mshtagim biyayis. These are all b'chal shaitim. He says, all this is up to the assessment of the dayan, because you cannot put into writing exactly how to define these specific criteria. That the DSM-5, it wasn't invented yet, and even if it was, it doesn't do that great a job of defining these things. You need a dayan in each case has to assess, is this person b'chal shaitim? The Magen Mishnah says, the Mishnah on the side, that clearly the Rambam understood the Gemara Chagiga. There's loved after these things. It could be anything, any of the criteria, anything that clearly indicates that this person is not sane is enough to put him into the category of a shait. So this really much broadens the category tremendously. That anyone who's doing things that are inexplicable and in a way that's crazy, so then he will clearly be considered a shait according to the Rambam. So the Divrei Chaim has a tshuva about this. There are many tshuvas. Divrei Chaim quotes these two tzadim, and he says we can't be machriya. We can't be machriya between the Rebbeinu Simcha and the Rambam. But he does add an important point. He says if the person is clearly a meshugana, he says whatever he does, he's just meshugana. then there's no machlekes. Then everyone's going to agree that this person is classified as a shaita. He said the whole discussion between Rebbe Nesucha and the Rambam would be somebody who seems regular, but there's something about him. He does something or some things that are just completely off with no explanation, and we have no, there's no sane reason why he's doing these things. So that is the discussion. Do you need specifically the Chagiga Simonim, or is it anything that we can just classify and say there's just something wrong with this person and he is a shaita? Now, Rav Moshe has a big chiddush here, and he says that the whole shita of the Rambam is really, he said that it's specifically said by Hilchas Eidos to bring out that it's, the Rambam is not necessarily saying that this person is not a bar das as far as all matters. Just because he has one thing, he's a meshugah, you know, kind of a isa davar, he has something that he's crazy about, it doesn't mean that he has no deah. What does it mean? He says that these criteria are criteria for whether a person is chayiv in mitzvahs. He said he can't be chayiv in mitzvahs halfway. So if someone is a shaita, then he's not chayiv in mitzvahs. And that's the lashon of the Rambam, that he can't say edus because he's not a ben mitzvahs. He's someone who he's excluded in something from mitzvahs because he's a shaita for that. So the Rambam understood from the Gemara Chagiga that he's excluded from all the mitzvahs. He's not a bar chiyuva. But, says Rav Moshe, when it comes to, let's say, kinyonim, which is not totally in being a bar chiyuva, even someone who doesn't is not chayiv in the mitzvahs of the Torah, he still could be involved in kinyonim. He's still someone who can have valid and binding transactions. So there, Rav Moshe says, it depends on each person in each case. If he's a bar das for this thing, even if he's crazy for other things, but if for this thing he's a bar das, so then we'll take it. So he does say that he's muchzik b'kach. We assume if he's crazy for one thing, that we have to assume he's crazy for everything. Until we can verify, clearly, if we can verify that he understands and he's, we'll do careful badikas and we see that he does get it, and he's acting in a way that's logical and sane and reasonable, so then he will be considered a pekech for that, and he could be involved in kinyanim and mekhel memker for those things. So this whole topic is very relevant with people who are elderly, and if chas v'shalom dealing with certain conditions, whether you know Alzheimer's or a certain level of dementia, so it needs a lot of yishuv to understand: is this person valid? You know, is he able to sign away things? Is he able to gift away things, or is he able to appoint people? And really, every single case needs to be assessed very, very carefully to understand what's the best mahalach. It's also a problem that there's a lot of conflicting laws with these things. The secular law has a much higher bar of what's necessary for it to be a valid kinyan. They're worried about coercion and things like that. So even though halacha also has coercion, but that we discussed under einus and maida, but that would be have to have a real einus in most cases. That's for gifts, we have different levels, al kalponim. But as far as das, until we have specific simoni shaita, or he's completely out of it, or things like that, most of the time, even if they're feeble-minded, most of the time the kinyanim will be chal. So generally, in such a situation, it's best to get beforehand. It's best to get the assets into an irrevocable trust with appointed trustees who have the power to deal with it. Otherwise, you end up with all sorts of situations that you have no real way of verifying. Was he bedaita when he gave it away? Or wasn't, and he is susceptible to all sorts of manipulation. So that brings us to the topic of apotropos. Apotropos is someone who is appointed to take care of someone else's assets, and he has the ability to buy and sell and, you know, invest on behalf of this person. So how that even works, how somebody could be taking someone else's things and buying and selling on their behalf, it could work. There are some Mishnah indicated works with Sechiyah. It's a schus for the person, because the person can't do it themselves. They need someone to take care of them, so therefore this person, this other appointed person, will do it. But it's hard to work that out with all the technicalities. Zachin me'odom, to sell something for someone is very difficult to work out with Sechiyah. It's more likely that the apotropos is seen as a shliach bezdin, someone who can't take care of themselves, is in the category of a yasim, whether they're practically a yasim or just the fact that they don't have anyone to take care of them. So they're like a yasim. And Bezdin is the Avim Shal Yisaimim. Bezdin is the Lashon Tirah Chazal. The Bezdin is the father of the Yisaimim. It's their responsibility to look after these Yisaimim as if it was their own children. So the apotropos is kind of the Shleich Bezdin. And Bezdin, of course, has the powers to buy or sell or take away, even if as necessary. So the apotropos, using that extended power, can manage the estate and the assets of someone who he was appointed to manage. Now, there are really four ways someone can become a halachic apotropos. The most preferable way is if in the case of Yerusha for Yosevim, so if the Moirish himself appointed a apotropos, if the person before he died, he appointed someone to manage his estate, so that is binding, that's valid, and the person now has the full authority to do as he sees with the assets. If there are any instructions left along with that, then he's expected to follow those instructions. But that person becomes the apotropos, and his rules are generally more lenient because he's empowered directly by the person who owned the assets, he's empowered by him, so therefore he generally has more latitude than the other apotropos. If there's the Moirish himself, the one who bequeathed the assets, did not appoint anyone, so then Bezdin is expected to appoint someone, and that has very strict rules. Bezdin is very strict about who they appoint and exactly the accountability of the person they appoint, and Bezdin will be much more on top of it if they're the ones who made the appointment. There's a third possibility of what's called the Yisayim Shesamchu. Even if a person was not appointed, but if the Yisayim themselves just made themselves dependent on someone, whether it's just a kind Samaritan, or it was a family, or it could be their mother, or it could be another family member, or a neighbor, someone who stepped in and started managing their affairs, and the Yisayim are essentially relying on them completely, so then that person becomes the de facto apotropos, and he can now manage the estate and even sell things on their behalf. So, and there's a fourth one of a court-appointed executor is recognized by halacha under din lachos adina and minig. The achrenim write that a court-appointed executor is a valid apotropos, and halacha will see him as the one who has the legal right, the halachic rights, to buy and sell on behalf of the person. Generally, this is not even archaic. If there's a fight and they go to settle it in court, that would be a problem of archaic. But if they just, the person passed away, or the person he lost his mind, and now he can't manage his own affairs, so the Chase Bank is not going to recognize the Bezdin appointed apotropos. So the legalities are often going to require a court appointed executor, and the halacha will recognize that as well. That person becomes the apotropos. Now, the halachas apotropos is complex. There are many, many detailed halachas about how he should spend the money, and once he becomes an apotropos, could he back out of becoming an apotropos? What happens if he's accused of malfeasance, if he's not doing the things properly, if he's making bad investments? In general, where he should invest, whether he should invest. So a Bezdin usually has to assume the role of the arbiter, or they should have a Talmud Chacham who's knowledgeable in these things, and if he has the trust of the family, so they can involve him to help make these decisions. If a person is elderly, you often have these kind of questions, and sometimes it has the status of Yisayim Shesamchu, that this person brought someone else in to manage their affairs before they became incapacitated, and so that person remains in that role because the person himself kind of relied on him and put him into that role. Other times the family will have to get involved, and they'll have to, after verifying that the person is worthy of having an apotropos, meaning he's not someone who's bedaita who can make his own decisions, so then the Bezdin or through courts will have to make an apotropos. It's important to realize an apotropos is not allowed to give things away. He's only appointed on behalf of the person, on the behalf of the person who was in his care. So he can't just decide that, he doesn't need this anymore, I'm giving it away. That's not one of his options. That's not l'tavis the person. He can't do that. So he definitely can't be Yerush Mechaim. He can't start giving out the person's estate. This is with the assumption, he doesn't need it anymore, so now he starts giving it away to the Yerushim. That's not one of the options of an apotropos. Apotropos is only there to help the person. So also it's generally wise to involve a Talmud Chacham who can help make decisions. Sometimes you'll have an estate that's left to an almana, and she starts giving things away, and it leads to some awkward situations that, she feels she wants to be nice, she's giving away her husband's menorah, and it belongs to the Yerushim. She can't just give it away. And if the person's still alive and she just became the apotropos over the nechasim, so you need his consent, and he's not there, so you can't just give things away at random. So a certain amount, maybe she's entitled through chiyuv iksuva, through chiyuv nesuin, but these are all very tricky situations, and at best they should be dealt with a professional, say in the legalities of it, and certainly in the halachas of it. And that way it'll be marbe a lot of shalom in Yisrael if that's done properly.